Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, April 22nd. I'm Ray Graff, Pets and Vets today, and joining us in the studio, all right, not in the studio, over the phone, let's say, Dr. Susan Sekuli of the Just Cats Veterinary Clinic in Guilderland and Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga. You have a question about your dog or your cat or other pet, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Sekuli, Dr. Dallas, your pet questions coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today, here to take your calls. Dr. Susan Sekuli of the Just Cats Veterinary Clinic in Guilderland and Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga, often called the Cat Whisperer. I don't know if she calls herself that, but Dr. Sekuli is a veterinarian who has been specializing in feline care for more than 24 years. She focuses on the entire cat's health, from kittens to senior cats, addressing behavior and nutrition while providing medical and surgical care. Dr. Dallas specializes in treatment of chronic health issues in pets using an integrative approach with an emphasis on Chinese medicine. She earned a doctorate in veterinary medicine from Ohio State University, specializes in veterinary acupuncture, Chinese herbal medicine, geriatric care, and nutrition counseling. If you have a question about your doggie or your kitty, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number on this, a call-in program, 800-348-2551. Dr. Chris Dallas, Dr. Susan Sekuli, welcome back to the show.
Hey there, Ray. Thank you.
How's it going?
Thank you, Ray. It's a new norm.
It really is. How are you coping, Dr. Sekuli?
We are doing okay. I was looking back through. We were last on your show last month.
I think it was right before March 11th.
Yes.
I think it was right before we stopped having guests in the studio. You were one of the last ones.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and you were clear, right? So we did not bring you any extra.
Well,
infections, right?
I don't think I have the COVID. I have a number of other ailments, okay. But let's not go into that right now.
But yes, we started curbside on that following Monday for our clinic. And at this point, we see no clients in the building, and we are carrying on as best we can. We are considered an essential business, so we take care of lots of sick kitties.
Well, okay, now this is interesting. How do you do this curbside?
So we ask them to, obviously they're in a carrier, so it's a little bit easier on the cat side of things, and they leave the carrier at the door. We take the cat in with the carrier, we disinfect the carrier at the handle, and then we take the cat out and take care of it, meaning either examination, treatments, et cetera, and then we pass them back out to the client. Typically the client's staying in the car while we work through that examination, and we're getting a little bit more flow going. It's as with everything, things are just in a flux, and when you change your whole system, it requires a lot more time. We have amazing clients, amazing staff that have been patient through this whole process.
How about you, Dr. Dallas?
I'm down to just seeing the patients who really would not keep walking or moving without treatment. It's a little more complicated because my patients really need to sit and relax when they're getting treated. And so I've had a couple of episodes where the owners waited outside and ended up with a disastrous mess to clean up afterwards. Some stress diarrhea. So sometimes I have them come in the building and then sit in the waiting room. It really just depends on the pet. And now everybody's in masks, so that's helpful. For us, and I don't have nearly the volume that most vet clinics have. So, because I take at least an hour with each patient.
We talked the last time you were here about the possibility of the virus being transferred to or from pets. And I'll start with you, Chris. Have you learned anything new about that?
Not really. I'll be curious to hear what Sue has to say. But one thing I did just find out, I got an email from IDEX, which is one of our two major veterinary labs. And they said that they have just developed a test for dogs and cats to test for COVID.
Oh.
So I literally got the email this morning and I haven't even had a chance to read it. But I don't know under what circumstances they're looking for us to use it. Sue, have you seen that or know anything about it?
We did, yeah, just yesterday, actually, it went by ours also. I have likewise not done a lot of research into it yet. And I think most of the literature, yes, there are some reports that some cats like that tiger in New York City, yeah. And something over in Belgium, I think, or somewhere. But for the most part, it really still is what we had said a month ago, that it's not transmittable from a cat or dog to a person. And they're just, you know, I think we need to look at that bigger picture and know that there are other concerns that we have for this COVID-19 in our pets, more of it from a stress-related standpoint than an infectious.
One of the great things about having pets at this time, especially when you're in a lockdown, is the stress level is reduced. It's really nice.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yes. Although we seem to be increasing the stress levels on our pets, it seems.
Oh, that's interesting. Really? You've noticed that?
So that's what Dr. Sekulli was just kind of referencing. Before we got on the show here, she was telling me, well, I'll let you tell. It's your story. You've got interesting story.
We see a lot more urinary issues. We've got, I had two block cats just this week, urinary obstructions. And so I think they pick up on our stresses for sure.
I'm not a doctor, but how does a urinary issue have anything to do with stress?
Oh, a lot. They're not quite drinking as much as they should. Their whole system becomes just a little off balance. And cats especially are those desert animals. And if they maybe don't drink one day, or they're accumulating a little bit of this excess stone formation or crystal formation, then yes, it can totally send them in a crisis.
Well, let's grab a call here before our first break. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Dr. Chris Dallas and Dr. Susan Sekulli on this edition of Pets and Vets. We begin in Seward, New York. And Kathy, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have two cats, and they're, you know, pretty healthy guys, guy and a gal, brother and sister. And they have no ticks. I was going to treat them. I have the, you know, the drops I use on the back, you know, of their neck there, usually. And, you know, I was getting ready to do that, but I don't find that they have any ticks. And I was wondering if you have any information as to, you know, how the ticks fared through this winter and whether they're out yet around here. And also, they groom each other quite a bit. Would they pick ticks off each other and, you know, eat them or anything?
Good question.
Really good question.
Anybody want it?
I never thought about that.
All right.
Go ahead, Tim.
Somebody. All right, I'll take this one. No.
Okay, great. Thanks, Ray.
Susan, you take this one.
So I actually don't know. My brother would tell me, because he's out in the woods a whole lot, is that he is starting to see ticks already, and I think it's going to be a decent tick season. I don't know that part of it. And that's a great question about them being able to groom each other. I don't think they can do enough of that, because we definitely see number of cats come in multiple cat households, and those ticks are pretty darn good about holding on.
Yeah.
So I don't think they groom it off of each other that well. I like that, you know, I'm not a big proponent of those flea collars, but that the Resto flea collar does a decent job, because you can put it on when they're out there and then take it off when they're off, if you're sure it'll stay on them. And then otherwise, the topicals, Revolution is still my favorite. I lean toward Dr. Dallas in that less is more. And so the more you can do from combing and cleaning or grooming them, the better.
All right.
And yes, the ticks are very active already. They've been active for about 4 to 5 weeks now. So they're out there.
It is Pets and Vets today on Vox Pop. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Dr. Susan Ciculli and Dr. Chris Dallas are here, and we'll be back with more of your calls coming up. One thing I've learned from doing a month of these shows with the guests on the phone is when you have more than one, it can be difficult coordinating between the guests, but these two seem to really be simpatico. Dr. Chris Dallas is here. Dr. Susan Ciculli is here. Now, don't screw it up, you two. All right, this email here is, this is from CT, and CT writes, "My cat, she's 1.5 years old. Previously feral, she repeatedly pees on the couch or our bed or a dog bed. It usually just is a drop. Occasionally it's more. She uses the two litter boxes. We have three dogs. Vet says they didn't see anything wrong when they took urine." All right, Susan, you go first.
These are the cases I always send to you anyway, Sue, so.
Yeah, right. I guess my two questions are, is how heavy is she? And are there other cats in the house? Did I hear that?
CT says three dogs, but doesn't mention any of the cats. Yeah.
Okay.
And there are two litter boxes for one cat.
Two litter boxes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't say anything about the kitty's weight, though.
And is it just on the couch?
It says here the peeing occurs on the couch or on CT's bed or on a dog bed. So it's kind of a, equal opportunity peer.
Yeah. Sounds like she might be trying to mark a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That would be my thought process. And she, as much as she thinks she likes the dogs, maybe they are stressing her a little.
Okay.
So I try to provide places for her to be safe from them, even though she appears to be safe and happy with them.
All right.
They subtly show us that they're not.
Okay.
I always pull out the feel away in these situations. Just
good idea.
Yeah, the feel away.
All right. Go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to elaborate. I was just going to say that's the feline pheromone that can be used. It can be helpful if there's a stress related issue here. It can help.
Right. Well, hold that thought, Dr. Dallas, because here comes another question about urine. This one is from Amy, and the subject heading Cosmic Charlie. And we've heard about Cosmic Charlie before on this program. I love that name. Amy writes, "My kitty loves to stretch out across me and snooze while I watch TV on the couch. The other night, I had to get up. When I lifted him up under his belly, a good splash of urine came out. And thanks. I'm so glad I'm doing this. Could this be a UTI? And if so, how would I get a urine sample from him?" And that's from Amy. And I say to all of you, check, please. Enough with these questions. But Chris, why don't you start with this?
Well, one way to get a urine sample, which of course would not be sterile if you do it at home, but you can put popcorn kernels into a litter box and then, pour it into a container to bring to the vet. But you can also just bring your kitty right to the vet and they can get the urine sample for you.
Okay.
And they're probably curbside like everybody else, but at least that way they'd be able to get a sterile sample.
Okay,
and then you can find out if it's a UTI.
Let me follow up for Amy, since Amy sent this in via email. Given that I don't know about you, Chris, but I know that Susan is offering curbside service, and it's a little more complicated than just bringing your pet in as it usually is in normal times. Would this be something Amy should worry about right away or just monitor this?
I think it's a telemedicine
that we're starting to do.
I know.
Because it's individual. I could be worried and nothing, or this cat really can be showing signs. I must admit, most cats have a pretty good ability to hold their urine. When we try to squeeze some, oh my gosh, you can't get it out at all. So if he just comes out and pees, I would be a little concerned about that, unless he was that relaxed that it maybe just happened out. But
I mean, if it only happened once, though, right? It shouldn't be.
I don't know.
Yeah, but cats, she's right, though. Cats are, with a dog, I don't think I would say with a dog I would monitor, especially a female dog. But it's true. Cats have really competent sphincters, as we say. And so they can really hold that urine quite well, unless there's inflammation. And that could be a sterile cystitis, which is what Dr. Sekulli was talking about earlier, where that's, you know, not an actual infection. It's more stress-related. But either way, the effect is the same. There's inflammation in the bladder.
All right, let's go back to the phones here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Judy is in Westfield. Hello, Judy.
Hi.
You're on.
I'm calling about my daughter and son-in-law's dog. It's an 8-year-old German pointer. And she's always enjoyed playing in their enclosed yard. But recently, she seems to be more scared about being outside. I think it first started when they were doing construction at the college across the street. But just in the last week, she gets so scared that we almost have to put a leash on her to get her to go outside. And when I was there last Sunday and we had her out, we took her to the far part of the yard and we were petting her, and she was just shaking all over. And I was wondering if there's some way to help her get over this fear. We think some of it has to do because there was a neighbor working in his backyard, and she's always been a very shy dog. And I was just wondering what we could do to help her enjoy the yard, because usually she enjoys it so much.
So a sudden onset of like a behavioral change like that, I probably would suggest they at least rule out potential hypothyroidism. Just because she's at the right age, and for something to happen acutely like that is a little unusual. And then I would say if that is not the case, if they do a thyroid panel and everything looks normal, it may be worth getting, you know, a behavior person involved. But, you know, you could, there's different approaches. I mean, you could do desensitization, you know, so that would be rewarding her when she's calm and relaxed. And it may start at the doorway. You know, they would start at the doorway and then slowly move out into the yard. But I feel like that might be something that a trainer could even potentially troubleshoot over the phone. They wouldn't would not even need to come in person. But I would want to rule out a physical underlying problem first.
And so you said it was hyperthyroidism?
Hypo in dogs. Yeah.
Hypo. Okay.
Yeah.
Hypo. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Judy,
you're
thanks
welcome.
A lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's Pets and Vets today. Remotely joining us, Dr. Chris Dallas and Dr. Susan Sekulli. How's it working out for you? Is it a little difficult?
No, my cats are distracting me. But other than that, I'm good.
Oh, how many cats you have there with you, Chris?
I only have two. I only have two here, but they wouldn't let me close the door. They were meowing and banging outside the door, so I let them in, and now they want to be part of the show, apparently.
Oh, okay. All right, let's go now.
Well, that is typical.
Feel free to put a cat on at any time. Let's go to Dee in Glenmont. Dee, you're up.
Hi, Ray. Hi, ladies.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an almost-year-old cat that I adopted from Kitten Angels, and he came to me with what they're calling Bartonella's syndrome or disease. Now, we've treated him 60 days with zerithromycin, and now he's on interferon. Is that something he'll be on for the rest of his life, and is this something that can be resolved?
Oh, Bartonella is one of those diseases that it depends on the cat, it depends on the veterinarian, it depends on other diseases or symptoms that this cat is having. I typically treat it if it's related to a gum disease or gingivitis or an upper respiratory. Okay. I would treat as you have done with the azithromycin, and then the interferon is really to try to boost his immune system. So anything you can do with supplements and diet changes would be my suggestion looking forward, so that it shouldn't become a long-term issue if you can boost his immune system.
Oh, okay. Is it a contagious disease? Because I have two other cats.
I typically do not see it something that is contagious.
Okay. And if I were to look at different kinds of food, He's currently eating wet and dry. He eats solid gold dry and not fussy cat for his wet food.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks, Dee. Appreciate the call. It's Pets and Vets today, 800-348-2551. And let's see, who's been waiting the longest? Oh, Rebecca in Peru. Rebecca, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I hope you guys are having a great day and staying safe. You're welcome. I just wanted to make a comment. I manage an animal shelter, an SPCA in upstate New York, and thankfully our region isn't being hit too harsh by COVID-ID, but we are helping out a lot of areas. And I wanted to say that the AVMA sent down some guidelines, which was sent to us by the ASPCA and our New York State Agriculture Market. Rapping about intaking animals with COVID that have been around COVID positive homes.
Yeah.
So when we're bringing them in, we are treating them. Actually, our protocols are pretty tight, so we really haven't changed too much, with the exception of taking them in and possibly giving them a bath. Now, the AVMA doesn't say that you have to bathe the animal. There isn't any, of actual facts saying that, any information yet saying that this virus can be transferred from pet fur to humans. But since we don't know, right, I treat everything like it's ringworm. We're very careful about the spread of any contagion. So we gown up, we glove up, we have a barrier over our clothes and on our feet, and we keep those animals or any sick animals to a very specific location, or even animals that are just intake that we don't know if they have anything. So, I don't know, I just wanted to give you and your listeners that information. Although there's nothing, linking, picking up, becoming positive to COVID-19 from pet hair. My thought process is, if you're washing your hands and you're washing everything and you're washing that virus off, then the virus can be in the air and live, and the virus can sit on, non-organic items and live for a while, then it must, sit on hair for a while. So I would think it would be smart to just, give a bath if you can. What are your thoughts on that?
I will talk from personal experience. We did have a cat come in. The owner was COVID positive. She was stressing because the wife now was also positive, and that was her person. And we took the same precautions that you're explaining. We are cautious. We wear masks. We have worn masks since we've gone curbside. We wash hands consistently. I am in with a group of other feline practitioners around the country, and we have all discussed not bathing cats because it's just way too stressful for them, and
I know.
Affected. So they did talk about, I don't know if you're using Rescue for a disinfectant, but there are some literature out there for a very, very diluted form if you want to have some comfort in that. We use Thieves. I'm a essential oil person, so I've been using Thieves cleaner, and I feel very confident with that also. So
I agree. I do use Thieves.
All right, Chris, you want to add something there?
My only other thought, and it's not even like attached to this actually, but a tick in cats. I just heard the other caller, and do you guys see a lot of Lyme or Ehrlichia anaplasmosis, coming from being diagnosed in cats? Are they tested for those things? These tick-borne diseases that are often transferred to dogs.
Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not in a primary care setting, so I usually have pets who come to me for more chronic issues, but I guess this is actually a better question for Sue, but my understanding is they don't really express symptoms of these diseases.
All right, Rebecca.
Correct. Especially for the Lyme anaplasmosis, some diseases that we have to worry about for the cat, but specifically not many.
Yes. All right, Rebecca, thank you very much. Go ahead, Chris, you want to add it?
I was just going to add, for Rebecca's sake, despite the fact that we hear about these conditions in dogs, we do know that about 90 to 95% of dogs will get Lyme disease and test positive but remain asymptomatic. So there is some similar almost immunity to some of these tick-borne illnesses. And I suspect we'll eventually find the same is true in humans, that some of us are walking around chronically infected, but we don't even realize it.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets today with Dr. Susan Ciculli and Dr. Chris Dallas. And we go now to Jeff in Sheffield, Connecticut. Jeff.
Hello, Ray, Chris, and Susan. I'm looking to adopt a pair of bonded cats, and I have a question about selecting the cats and selecting a veterinarian. Regarding the cats, is it better to adopt from an agency, shelter, or owner? And are there red flags to look for in the cat's history that might lead to future behavioral issues? For example, my cats will be strictly indoors. If they've lived outdoors for or had access to the outdoors for some of their life, would that possibly be a bad thing? And regarding selecting a vet, for a good reason, a lot of adoption agencies require you have a vet lined up. And I've been having a challenge locating a vet with that's even, you know, taking any new patients with trustworthy reviews. Are there websites that you might recommend I look to find a vet?
Who wants this one?
I'll take part of it. Where are you located again?
I'm in Suffield, Connecticut, on the Connecticut River.
Oh yeah,
across from Enfield, just south of Springfield.
I mean, I'll tell you, after working closely with Dr. Ciculli here, I can tell you that if you are adopting cats, if you can find a exclusively feline practice, I can't say enough about that environment. And I used to work a couple of days with Dr. Ciculli, and it really humbled me because I realized how much I was kind of taught that cats are basically small dogs, and they're really not. So if you can find a cat-only practice, I would suggest it. I've definitely learned a lot from working with Dr. Ciculli. Sue, do you have some comments on where to find a bonded pair? And I'm not sure where
I think all the literature we have out there is littermates. So they definitely become the best friends. And I go by, I don't think you're, you know, either through a breeding situation or any rescue group, but go with someone that has some experience with fostering, because they really get to know the behavior mm-hmm. and the personality, and mm-hmm. they can tell within a litter which ones like other cats and then which ones prefer to be the more solitary. And then the last is catvets.com is the American Association of Feline mm-hmm. Practitioners. And they have a great website that you can just plug in your zip code and then put, the area. And I agree. I like that ours is a cat only, but I think you more so need a specific veterinarian that loves working with cats. And I think mm-hmm. you find that even in a dog and a cat practice. And I think I've said this before. I think the trend is going to be, you know, within a cat and dog practice, they're just those that really like working with them.
All right,
right
Jeff.
Right.
Go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say some advice that Sue actually gave me when I was looking to adopt two cats was she actually suggested that I foster a pregnant mom and have the kittens in my house and then choose from the litter. And that actually worked out really well for me. So I actually ended up with the mom, and the kittens actually went and got adopted. And then I found another male that was a kitten, and he bonded with the mother. So that's another possibility is you could do the fostering yourself and then choose who you like.
You know, regarding cats in the same family, you know, little baby cats, is it possible they grow up and not get along?
Yep.
Wait a minute. Happen. You have a brother or sister, Ray?
Yeah, I got a brother.
Right. There you go. Enough said.
Fair enough. All right, let's take a break. Great idea. 800-348-2551. It's a good thing he's not listening. 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets. We'll be right back. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's Pets and Vets today. Dr. Chris Dallas and Dr. Susan Ciculli with us. The number is 800-348-2551. Few emails here. This one is from Natalie. Natalie writes, we have a 7-month-old female border collie. She is our brightest, most intense, and most affectionate border collie. The issue is that she not only likes to chew on fabric, but eats it and chews holes in her beds. No amount of bitter spray or vinegar stops her. I like to blame this on her first-time mom, who probably didn't let her suckle enough. Any suggestions on how to get her to be less interested in chewing on her crate bed and other fabric? We are to the point of thinking of a little hot sauce. She gets a lot of exercise and activity, and that is from Natalie.
Well, I'm actually dealing with this with my new adopted dog, and I actually have her crate with nothing soft in it. Yep, she's just going to have to outgrow it, and you could try... It's a tough one. I mean, you could try hot sauce. I don't really love those kinds of approaches. But I just am more, when there's bad behaviors, I'm all about avoiding or redirecting. And of course, this isn't one that you can really use positive reinforcement for. So I just say take them away until she learns not to chew on them. And hopefully just she doesn't find something new to chew on, like shoes or couch cushions. But I'd like to just avoid the problem until they outgrow it.
This one is from
my approach.
This one is from Kurt, and Kurt apologizes for being morose, but it's a good question. Kurt writes, wondering if there are places set up to take on dogs from COVID patients who have passed in hospitals or simply cannot afford them anymore. Local shelters are not open. And again, Kurt apologizes for being morose, but that's a real world question.
It is. That's a great question.
I haven't heard of anything. Have you, Sue?
No, I have not, although I'm sure, you know, how the Facebooks and some of the social medias have been starting to place. I did see something with some of the rescue groups being able to provide food for certain people, but that's a great question.
All right.
Yeah, that is a good question.
Here's one from somebody, Linda. Linda writes, I've been caring for a cat on my block who was abandoned when the owner moved. I've been trying to find a home for him for 8 months. He is well-known in the neighborhood and is very used to being mayor on the block, socializing with all passers-by. I can't add him to my two-cat family. Do you think he could adjust to being indoors? If not, how great are the dangers that he would try to find a home if I found him? Find home, meaning Linda's place, if Linda finds him a new place to live.
Wow.
In other words, she has a neighbor about a block away considering him, and she's just worried that this mayor of the neighborhood will come back.
Yeah, and he might. He might think that space will, because he's so used to it. So maybe coordinating with the neighborhood, I mean, at least in going into this nice weather, that he has safety spaces for him in case he does.
Yeah.
Those are always tough ones, whether they're going to be okay staying inside forever or are really going to not like that.
Yeah, and cats really have a mind of their own. Yeah, I mean, they'll do whatever they want.
They do.
Yeah, it is a toss-up. I do know a lot of cats who have successfully gone from being outdoor only to indoor only, but it is a crapshoot for sure.
All right, back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Althea in Red Hook. Althea, you're on.
Yes, hi. First of all, Danny DeVito hated Harry Potter, and they were litter mates, and he would swat poor Harry Potter every time he walked past them. So siblings don't like each other sometimes.
Okay, all right. I'll take your word for it.
Now, my question is about, I still haven't forgiven the vet 40 years ago who put my Siamese tailor to sleep without me holding her in my arms. What are you doing about, can't you take these animals in, especially if it's euthanasia, with their moms or dads? If everybody's in gowns and masks and everything, you can't explain to the animals, you know? You explain to me. I'm 77. Yeah, you're going to put me in a hospital with ET people around me, you know, that I can't see or anything, not my loved ones. But you can't explain to your kitties or your dogs.
Well, you make a point.
Yeah, you do. And I only have had to euthanize one patient since this started, and I did do a house call, and we were just masked up, and the dog was very peaceful. But, Sue, what are you doing for that situation?
It depends on the veterinarian. In Gilderland, we are allowing you to hold the cat. We have an IV set up, and we're actually out on our front porch area, and we run the IV out so that there's that. We're truly, and I understand, I get it. It's the same as why they're not allowing people in the hospitals, and I have my challenges with all of the procedural kind of things. However, you know, I put my staff at risk every time anybody comes in. And so our goal is to try to keep us all as healthy as possible. So, yeah,
you know, I just had a thought as to how one could achieve both the pet being with the owner and it really still being in the hospital. Do you think it would be possible to sedate the kitties while they're in their crate in the car? And sort of leave the owners in the car with the kitties while they're falling asleep. So at least the initial stage of it is with their owners. I don't know if that's a possibility.
I think we're working with that. Yeah, it is. I so hear you. And we do notice that they are, you know, it's different. You know, with the client being on the phone and the cat being in the room, and they're hearing the client going, where are they? They're usually here with me. So,
yeah.
You know, we're definitely seeing the same stresses on the cat side that, you know, we're seeing on our human side of things. And yet working through it the best we can to keep everyone healthy.
Let's go back to our phone lines. And Maria in Savoy, you're on.
Hi there. My question is that I have a cat who is about 12, and he's really skinny, and he kind of gently sways back and forth just while staring at you. And I don't know what it means that maybe he's always hungry. So I was thinking it could be hypothyroid, but I just was wondering what you think.
I think that would be my first thought. And I wonder with the swaying, if he could be dealing with a bit of hypertension perhaps. So that's to me is worth asking your vet to see him so that they can draw some blood work and see where his thyroid levels are. And if they're set up for it, ideally they would check a blood pressure on him as well.
Agreed.
Oh. Yeah. Hypertension, huh? Okay.
Well, hypertension secondary to the hyperthyroidism. Yeah. Mentioning that he's, so if you're, when I was in general practice, I often didn't treat the hyperthyroidism if it was fairly mild, and but if it was causing hypertension, I would treat that first.
Okay,
and then
thank
hold
you
off
so
on
much.
The hyperthyroid treatments. Yeah, sure. I definitely think that's worth getting checked out.
Maria, thank you very much for the call. We go to Amim in Middletown. You're on.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone.
Hi.
I have a question about flea and tick oral medication. My last dog, I tried the on-fur drops. She had a thick fur. So it worked on the neck, but the ticks latched on eyelids, on ears, on the lips. So I opted for oral medication, which was very fine. Even in the winter in Florida, they have a little bit of a flea problem down there. Till to that day when I needed a refill, they offered me a different oral medication, and I had to learn that the dog suffered from seizures. So what I also learned is one medication is transported by the blood system. The other one works on the central nervous system. Is there any research there that certain oral medication are better for certain breeds of dog, or what's your take on it?
Oh, boy, that's going back for me. I know that there are certain breeds that who are sensitive to ivermectin specifically, but that's not really going to be used for flea and tick. That's more in the heartworm preventative world. So that's something that I think is usually best calling the companies directly to find out if they have any documented breed sensitivities, depending on which products you're talking about. And you said you couldn't use the flea collar on this dog because of thick, particularly thick fur.
Yeah, it yeah, more or less it's too weak because of the thick fur. So it's fine around the neck and on the back, but then the ticks move then, you know, to other areas.
The tips of the toes and things like that. So I, you know, if there's specific concerns about breed sensitivity, I think those are best asked directly to the companies, and you can just call them their customer service numbers.
Okay, thanks for the call. Over
That's
to
That's a great idea.
Over to Olive Ridge, and Abby is on. Hello. Olive Ridge it is.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for what you all are doing. I really appreciate it. And I hope everybody's staying safe and well. I have a mixed Maine Coon who is about 13 years old, and just in the last, I would say, like 3 months, his fur started matting up, like quite a bit. So I started cutting out some of the mats, but I'm just wondering what you think the cause of this is and what I should do to help it. He normally has a very luxurious, beautiful coat, I will say.
How old is he?
13.
2 years old? Oh, 13 years old. Okay. He may be starting to have some arthritis and maybe not grooming himself as well. That's sometimes what we see. That would probably be my first thought. And then is he on dry food, canned food, or a combination?
He mostly eats a combo. He mostly eats wet food, and we haven't changed the food at all. It's always been wellness.
Okay.
Yeah. I have also seen cats with dental, like if they have an acutely painful tooth, they will stop grooming as well. So a quick check in the mouth by a vet, or if you feel comfortable. It's tough because not all dental lesions are apparent with cats. They sometimes have gingiva that can come up and sort of conceal what's underneath. But arthritis is a kind of thought too. Yeah. And be careful. I would not cut his mat outs. Oh, go ahead, Sue.
Don't cut them out?
No, go ahead. Yeah, don't. Yeah, be careful about cutting them out, because the minute you lift it up and then you try to cut, it's we have definitely seen plenty of cuts onto the skin because of that. So especially the older cats, they will tend to have that thin skin. So be careful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can use electric clippers, but just I would definitely stay away from scissors. Because you don't even realize the skin is getting sucked into the mat.
Yeah.
And I have stapled up many a cat from well-intentioned owners who are just trying to make their kitties feel better.
Yeah. Okay. And to be honest, it probably is something you should bring the cat in for. You know, we are definitely still seeing a lot of grooming concerns that need to be addressed and not put off any longer. So I would definitely, if you have the ability to bring him to your vet, I would do that.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I'm high risk for COVID, but I wanted to bring him in. I just wasn't sure. So I hopped on the phone right when you all were on the radio. Oh. So, but I will.
Oh, great.
That.
Well, I hope you stay healthy too, Abby. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number, and Lee is in Ghent. Hello, Lee.
Hi. Thanks, Chris and Susan and Ray. I have a 12-year-old female cat who has a chronic cough, and I've never had her checked by a vet. She just it only coughs like she coughs about once a week, maybe twice a week. And the cough lasts for about a couple of minutes, and she's had it for a number of years now. And I was reading today in a vet bulletin that I should be worried about heartworm that for cats that is carried by mosquitoes. My cat is pretty much an indoor cat anyway, but she does occasionally go outdoors. Because the heartworm in cats can also infect the lungs. And I don't know if this is something I should worry about or if cats typically just have a cough or if this is something I should get checked.
You've stumped the band.
Dr. Dowish, you want to start with that?
No, that's okay. You go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think you should definitely check things out for your kitty.
Coughs are okay if they're very occasionally. One time a week is a little more than I'm comfortable with. It's very interesting because my brother, I saw him just recently, and he was talking about his cat that is also doing some coughing. So the easy things that you can try to change at home would be change the litter, the type of litter that you're using. They go in it every day. See if just a different litter might be enough. Maybe that's been an irritant. Maybe there's environmental type things that are affecting her cough. And then if it doesn't change with that, then I definitely think I'd do more of a workup. I've seen anything from asthma, heartworm disease, to actually, you know, some types of lesions in the lungs. So I would, I'd pursue it a little bit more. Is she healthy otherwise, acting, eating okay?
Well, we lost her.
Oh,
that's okay. That's good. I think good advice. Let's go to Steve in New Lebanon. Steve, you're on.
Hi there. Well, in keeping with the 13-year-old cat theme, we have one. Yes.
It always starts, everything starts
beforehand to get that in.
Okay.
Right. he's a male. He has diabetes. I give him shots twice a day. He's also had some urinary tract issues in the past, and so he's on prescription dry food. But he's been losing his hair over the last, maybe 5 months from the tail upwards and his back. Mm. And now it seems to be on his side as well, his left side. Thoughts on that?
We have about 1 minute here, folks.
Well, my first question would be, is he on any flea preventative by any chance?
No.
It's not. Yeah, it's not the time of year, but if you've ever had a history of fleas in your house, they will pop up any time of year, including the dead of winter. Mm. And the distribution of what you're describing, that would be my first thought. Sue, you want to take it from there?
Agreed. Absolutely. Okay. Yes. Any dermatologist would tell us, make sure you're treating for fleas first. And there's some really safe, easy topicals out there. So start with that. Exactly.
And it only takes one flea when they're allergic to really for them to overgroom like that.
Okay. An
indoor cat.
Oh yeah, I know. I've only had indoor cats, and I will have flea outbreaks every now and then. But the other thought too would be a chiropractic issue. He could be having some nerve pain down below. So if you can find a holistic vet who does acupuncture and chiropractic after you treat for fleas, then that would be the next step that I would take.
Well, you know, you two did a really fantastic job of meshing together here. Well done. And next time you're on, hopefully you'll be in the studio and everything will be fine. We'll have a couple of cocktails. We'll do the show. It'll be fun. Hey, Dr. Susan Ciculli, Dr. Chris Dallas, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Support comes take from care. The Hyde. Take care. The Hyde Collection, temporarily closed to support our community, providing online art with images and visual exhibitions. HydeCollection.org for details. Assisted living at the Massery Residence at Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing seniors help with activities of daily living to support an active lifestyle. 518-689-0453 for information and tours. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for calling. Apologies to the many who are left on the line. This is what happens when the doctors arrive for pets and vets. You got to get in early. But thank you, and we'll have them back. Even if they have to be on the phone, we will have them back, and we'll do it again soon. So thanks for calling. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones were answered. Boy, guest appearance. Charlie Knight answered the phones. Very nicely done. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on The Big Program, join us for another Science Forum. Stand by now for 51%.